Welcome to the No Fungi, No Future podcast. In these episodes, we interview experts in the field to gain a deeper understanding of the magical and mysterious networks of mycelia that are all around us, to learn how they impact our lives and the planet. In this episode, we have the second part of our interview with Mark Speer. Mark is lab director at RMS Fungi. In this episode, we learn about lessons in microphotography, mushroom clubs, and Mark's thoughts on cooking and eating mushrooms. So sort of related to that, I know that you've been doing some cool things about really close-up photography of fungi.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
And I'm curious about that journey and what have you seen? When you go that close-up, what do you see? What are the things that jump out at you?
Well, I'm sorry, but you've just poked the uber geek button.
That's okay. That was the point.
You know, if you want to know what's going on, you have to really try to see it at multiple levels. You know, you need to see it at a systems level, but you got to also see it at a cellular level. And getting really great micro photographs is just mostly a matter of having the geekiness to want to spend 2 hours or whatever it takes to get that picture. Mm-hmm. So taking the picture, you know, it might take the first 40 minutes, and post-processing all the pictures you get into a final image might take another hour. So like anything else, you can do as well as you're patient enough to do. Mm-hmm. And for these fungi, there's a whole world right there in front of you. And it's not just fungi, of course. Microphotography is valuable for a lot of different things. But for my use, there's a world, what's the quote, the world in a grain of sand? Yeah. It really is. And the closer up you get, the bigger it is.
How can you give us a sense of what are you doing there? How close are you getting up, and what do you
I have a microscope, and you know, the old days where you could say it was 50x, that was when you could print an image. Now images are on computers, and if your monitor is twice as big, the image is twice as big. That doesn't mean it has more resolution. Doesn't mean it shows more details, but it gets more enlarged. So the real secret to all that, and so I have the microscope. I also have built one of those what they call extreme macro rigs, which it has been the kind of the domain of entomologists, and I want to say entophotographers. I'm not sure what they call themselves, but it's a way to get extremely close up detailed pictures without using a microscope, but with using another whole rig.
Yeah,
and the one I built happens to have a microcontroller in it, and it controls the stage, and it can make those motions of the giant lenses repeatable enough that you can stack images. And that's really the thing. When you get that close, you can't see very much depth, so you have to take a whole series of pictures and then stitch them together in the computer. And and nowadays, you know, just a regular PC can do what ILM used to be. $100 million project, but now it's.
May I interject?
Sure,
please.
I'd like to listen and help my husband along. Rather than talk about the nitty gritty of how you perform the photography, how about the purpose of why you do it?
The purpose is to learn. I mean, you just got to see what's going on, most fungi are molds, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not accessible, and including a lot of important, disease organisms that happen on all plants. The whole field of mycology probably came out of plant diseases, you know, corn and trees and whatever. Most of those are molds, and they are not a lot you can see with your eyes unaided. And in mushroom growing, you still have that fine mycelium, which to your eye just looks like a tiny thread. But in the microscope, you can see it's actually a pipe. It's a network of food gathering and food transport system, equivalent to like looking at a city from space.
Wow.
And you can tell a lot about what's going on by understanding the material flow.
Yeah. Is that kind of at the same level as the microbiome that you're looking at? So you can kind of get insights about...
Are integral to almost every microbiome on dry land. In the ocean, it's different, of course.
Yeah. Very cool. Can you talk a bit about the Western Pennsylvania Mushroom Club? What is it? How did it begin? I know you've had a role in that.
Actually,
What's your current
we
role?
were, what is it, 20 years, do you think we were in there?
In where?
At Western PA Mushroom Club.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lovely mushroom club, and it's especially good at teaching people things. I mean, if since the startup, I mean, we were probably there at the second meeting, and we probably were active in it for 20 years, and it's especially good at teaching people about what mushrooms are, a little bit about how they work in the environment, and like how not to kill yourself by picking the wrong mushrooms. Really good people. We really enjoyed it. But what we did is we wanted to, our thing was mushroom cultivation, more than gathering mushrooms in the woods. And we wanted to help the club. So what we figured out was a way to make a kit that the club could have, where we would bring the materials, which are very, very cheap. It's all waste products. And the people at the club would form an assembly line, and they would assemble all the ingredients into a kit. And this kit, if you took this kit home, you could grow some oyster mushrooms. The price of a year's membership in the club was lower than the price you could buy one of these kits for. And every club member got a kit for free. So we would get 100 new members every year on Mushroom Cultivation Day, because they came for the kit. They got to know the people there. They got to know what was going on. And we got a lot of new members, and everybody went home happy, and a lot of mushrooms were grown. So,
So if someone was like an amateur gardener and they wanted to get started just learning a bit more about mushrooms, what advice would you give them?
you definitely want to join a club. Now, I'm assuming this person doesn't want to die, and doesn't want to throw up and wish he was dying. There are some mushrooms in the woods that far exceed any mushroom you can buy in the store. And they're not rare. I mean, they're common mushrooms that show up every year. But there are some dangerous ones. There's about a half a dozen ones that are called safe for beginners because they don't have anything that really looks like them. But you don't want to go out on your own and start that. You want to go to a club, and you'd be surprised how friendly and how at least the clubs I know and have been to, people just welcome any new person, and I'm happy to lead a foray and say, well, see this one, that's this one in the book, and that one is always safe, and you can eat that one. Rebecca's attitude towards it is, if you were a bird watcher, would you only look at birds that you could kill and eat? No, you'd look at them because you like them. And there's a whole group of people who just want to see the different kinds of things, some of which are rare, many of which are just beautiful, and some of which are so important to the environment. But then there's another group of people that just want to get dinner. And in either case, if you start by joining a local club, it's a great heads up. It's a great way to start. There's books, the online, there's a bunch of online resources, including keys that you can look up mushrooms from. Don't bet your life on those, unless you already know something about what's going on.
Got it. So I was also wondering, how do you incorporate mushrooms into your diet personally? I know you eat them in various ways. What strategies do you have for doing that?
Well, basically the first step is getting the mushrooms. And if something comes up in the yard that I like, that's one of our favorites, we might grab it. But as a practical matter, doing the research for our clients, we need to grow a bunch of them. We have a bunch of lion's mane right now, seven different strains of lion's mane, which are way more different in speed and size and shape than I would have guessed. Anyway, so we're growing mushrooms on a regular basis, and some part of that harvest, goes to our table. Mostly what we're growing them for is to give data on the size and the shape and the speed and the best way to grow them and this and that. And sort of a side benefit of that is mushrooms to eat, and so we do.
I mean, are there certain dishes that you really enjoy? How do you get them into you?
Well, every different species has its sort of preferred way to eat it. Morels, for example, morel pizza is wonderful. That'd be my favorite way to eat morels. Almost any kind of mushroom. If you're not familiar with it, a good place to start is like a scrambled egg in the mushroom. So that the mushroom won't be the only thing you're eating, but will be in a context you're familiar with enough so you can see what the mushroom adds or doesn't add. And they're very different. Hen of the woods, you wouldn't, you know, would make a great casserole. Shiitakes are nice barbecued. You know, it's like saying, how would you eat a vegetable? Well, it depends on the vegetable, right? You wouldn't eat carrots likely the same way you'd eat a tomato.
Mm-hmm.
Usually.
Right. So basically, yeah, experimentation and seeing what works for you, right? Yeah.
Right.
We're extremely simple cooks.
Yeah.
Although we've been vegetarians for approximately 50 years, my cooking heritage comes from Canada, where salt is a spice. So.
And mayo is a condiment.
So we're very simple cooks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode featuring our conversation with Mark Speer. Be sure to look out for our next episode coming out soon, where we will continue this conversation. Until then, be sure to get some healthy mushrooms into your diet. Also, please take a moment to like and subscribe to our channel and drop us any comments. Your feedback is most welcome. Thanks for listening.